This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Dashran Johan. Last Saturday, the 31st of July, saw more than 1,000 young Malaysians take to the streets to voice their frustrations against the current Perikatan Nasional Administration. Protesters demanded for the Prime Minister, Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, to resign, for Parliament to be allowed to reconvene properly, and for full moratoriums to be given out to all Malaysians during these trying times of the COVID-19 pandemic. Following the protest, the police announced that they will be calling up and investigating both organisers and participants of the Lawan protests. But is that fair? Joining me on the show today to share her observations and thoughts about the protests, as well as the investigations that are currently taking place, is Wachala Naidu, the Executive Director of the Centre for Independent Journalism. Welcome to the show, Wachala. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you very much. How are you, Dashran?
I'm doing good, you know, as well as one can be during these politically turbulent times, you know. Now, Wachala, let's just start from the top. What did you make of the protests?
Actually, I'm really inspired, I have to say, first and foremost, right? And completely in awe of the level of organization that went into it, the messaging behind that. I'm also really thankful to the organizers, the youth organizers, for the measures they had really put in place to ensure that this was a peaceful protest. It was a peaceful protest. The organizers had the necessary standard operating procedures in place. They had shared this prior to the event, you know, and these include the level and the thought and the planning that had gone to it is something that is to be admired and also acknowledged, because they've asked participants, if possible, to get tested for COVID, be double masked, maintain social distancing, you know, things like don't share placards. It was really, really necessary. Yeah, they had people on the ground, they had marshals in place to ensure social distancing was maintained, they were distributing hand sanitizers, and it was organized to the extent when they were told to disperse, the crowd disbanded. Yeah, and they even had, you know, things planned to such an extent where they had medic and observer teams on the ground. Right. And all this, of course, despite all the intimidation and, you know, some of the disruption by the authorities, even, you know, prior as well as during the event itself.
Now, Wachala, would you consider this a successful, peaceful protest?
Yes, definitely. I think it definitely was peaceful. Yeah, the messaging was very clear. And in fact, the demand was for, or the call was for, a peaceful process. And I say it's successful because these are young people who had, you know, at the risk of their own health and life, had gone down to the ground with a clear messaging. And I think we hear them loud and clear. Yeah, and the general public hear them loud and clear. And that is in itself a success. Yeah, in as much as the intimidation, you know, prior to the event, during the event, and now even post the event, yeah. But, and despite some of the negative comments that, you know, they're constantly getting, the fact people are talking about it is an indication of how successful it was.
Now, before we get to the intimidation, because I do want to get your thoughts on that, I want to ask, are we bearing witness to a new movement taking shape in Malaysian politics, unlike anything we've seen in a long time, a youth movement specifically?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, we have to understand that, you know, freedom of assembly and expression, you know, these are fundamental rights. And these are rights that are essential in, you know, in holding and ensuring and holding our government to account. And these rights must always be protected and upheld. And we cannot have the government use the pandemic as a pretext or an excuse to justify or prevent people from exercising these rights. Now, the fact that this protest was initiated and led by young people is definitely a growing movement of people who are now not afraid to speak up. It is crucial and important that, you know, if we know we are experiencing an oppressive regime or a government that seems to have failed in addressing not just the pandemic, but, you know, the way our entire economic livelihood is really affected. And then you have this young people, you know, filled with ideas, innovation, energy, and lack of fears, leading the discussion, shaping the narrative now in Malaysia. It is the start of more things to come. And I think it's a start to a healthy change that we are seeing. And these are children, you know, these are our sons, our daughters, our sisters, brothers. These are our students. These are young people wanting to bring about change. And I want to stress, at the risk of their own lives. And that shows how important it is to have that message come across. And even if we are to draw parallel to all the different protests we have seen in Malaysia, right?
Right.
This, we are not, you know, youth movement is nothing new in Malaysia. Even pre-independence, we've had youth movement, right? Post-independent, in although a lot of it, we've seen a lot of political movement. We've seen the anti-ISA movement in the past. We've seen the Reformasi movement. We've
That's
seen
right.
the Bersih movement. All this, you know, needed some impetus. It needed groups of people wanting to make the change and willing to take the risk to bring about the change. Mm. Yeah. And it's a process. Yeah.
Right.
And there will always be naysayers. But in building the momentum, we are gaining the trust of the rakyat that we need to act. And, you know, these young people are doing this for us now in Malaysia. There is hope now, really.
Now, Wachila, I want to ask you, what exactly constitutes a peaceful protest? And I ask this because there is a video of a group of angry youths at the protest, jumping around, flipping their middle fingers. And initially, many were quick to dismiss them, saying that they are just provocateurs and things like that. But later on, many also started to defend them, saying that they are not provocateurs from the outside. They are just a group of disenfranchised youth, and they have, they just have a different way of expressing themselves. Where do you stand on this?
To answer your first question, Prashant, in terms of what's peaceful protest, I mean, peaceful protest is basically peaceful in nature, right?
Yep.
Which are often organized because people participating have a slightly different or rather calmer approach to change than their violent counterparts.
Mm.
Yeah. And this was a peaceful process because the messaging was very clear. There was no call for violence. Yeah. I'm not going to go into a discussion to talk about, you know, is violent protest recognized or not recognized? Yeah.
Yep.
That's a large discussion that we need to talk about. But, you know, in terms of civil disobedience, in terms of wanting to get our message across, in terms of wanting to bring about change, the message was very clear. It reminded people that even when we are governed by a very oppressive regime, a regime that seemed to fail to address the needs and the priorities of the rakyat over their own political agenda, the power still lies with the people. Yeah, and that was the intention of the protest and the messaging behind it. Yeah. Now, in terms of some of the incidences, yeah, I was actually quite appalled, actually quite shocked, really, to see the way media converged towards them, the couple of incidences.
Right.
Yeah? And I think what we need to really do is unpack our own social biases. Yeah. Expressions come in many diverse, unique, contextualized forms. Yeah. And we have to be very careful about labeling people. Why are we singling out this group of young people who have different ways of projecting their or expressing their dissatisfaction? Yeah. And we have to also understand, not only does it take away from the message in itself, it causes more harm to the young people who were using these forms of expression, you know, which is actually beyond our accepted, you know, in terms of what we consider norm. You know, and beyond our own comfort level, you know, using crude languages, even using languages which may be coarse, maybe vulgar, does not necessarily, you know, amount to, you know, being labeled as provocateurs or dissenters. These are young people that were expressing themselves, who had the right to be there. And for us to really unpack this, we need to go beyond our own interpretation of what should be allowed, what shouldn't be allowed, right?
Yep.
And we need to challenge it and not to sensationalize it. And I think it became a real issue when there was this crowd of people wanting to capture what they were saying, which then led to actually certain breaches of SOPs, right? So I really call out to not just the public, but also media on what and how we ourselves basically portray our own messaging, you know, and media reporting. Let's not create another layer of discrimination and biases towards particular categories of people just because of the way they express themselves.
On the show with me today is Wachala Naidu, Executive Director of the Center for Independent Journalism, talking to me about the Lawan protest that took place on Saturday. After the break, I'll be asking her about the police investigations that are currently going on towards participants and protesters. So we'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Wachala Naidu, the Executive Director of the Center for Independent Journalism. We're talking about the Lawan protest that took place on Saturday. So, Wachala, as I understand, on the day, organizers tried to negotiate with the police to allow protesters to enter Dataran Merdeka, but to no avail. What can you tell us about the interaction between the police and the protesters, whether it's the organizers or participants? What was it like on that day?
So, obviously, the negotiation was between the organizers, young people, and the authorities. That itself shows the level of maturity of the organizers, right? And being able to enter into negotiation with the authorities. What it actually shows are two levels, right? One is the authorities themselves were rather unclear what was happening amongst themselves. Yeah. One instant, you have the authorities initially allowing the participants to enter into a specific direction leading to Dataran Merdeka, right? Opening up that road. But then this agreement was later countered when they positioned, you know, their cars, their police cars, and blocked that road again. So it shows that there is some level of mismanagement of their own messaging, their own agreement, and decision-making process. Now, the second thing, and that was really crucial that we should note and really applaud the organizers, is the fact that in the negotiations, the organizers at no point did they use forcible entry. There was no show of violence. And instead, what they did was they adapted. Yeah. The protesters were asked to sit on the street. Yeah. The speeches continued, the singing continued. So, you know, despite the prevailing attempts by the authorities to confuse, restrict, and intimidate, the protesters continued with the protest. The messaging continued. And I really hope that we could really discuss and unpack a little bit more the different types of intimidation that was happening prior and also before. But that negotiation in itself and that interaction between the police and the organizers and protesters is actually indicative of our current failure in systems, because the authorities should have facilitated this process. I mean, we are talking about open air, highly ventilated space.
That's right.
And there is no reason to barricade, you know, the protesters from going into that space. Dataran Merdeka is very, very symbolic. Yeah. So it's all these attempts by the state, you know, to stop and prevent people from just exercising their rights.
Now, one last question before we discuss the intimidation part. What do you make of the criticisms by some quarters that the demonstration should not have been held, as it would only make the COVID-19 cases increase?
Let's face the most important fact and reality, right? Mm-hmm. What is the current environment here? We, you know, in Malaysia, we have already experienced a soaring, you know, COVID-19 caseload. The numbers are appalling. The numbers of death is appalling. The suicide numbers are appalling. Yeah. Our health system is completely overwhelmed. And in most instances, you know, the fracture is now becoming more rampant and prevalent. You know, hospitals are not completely overwhelmed and not able to deal with these cases. We see instances where our livelihoods being threatened, and you know, people have lost their jobs. And what did the government do? The government declared an emergency. It imposed its own repressive draconian laws, it suspended parliament. And even when parliament was reopened, supposedly reopened, what did we get for the whole of last week, right? Mm-hmm. So in any normal functioning democracy, yeah, especially I would say during a pandemic, people must still be able, must still be allowed to demand accountability. Yeah, and demanding accountability could be through many means. And if all fails, then through peaceful protests, adopting appropriate health measures, you know. And we even the United Nations have clearly released its position saying that COVID-19 restriction, you know, cannot be used to undermine or stop freedom of assembly and association.
Right.
And so this crisis actually, you know, all the more underscores the importance of a protest when the government is seen to have failed in dealing with the pandemic. And, you know, in all the naysayers, the attackers against, you know, the protesters and the organizers, please, you know, bear in mind and remember what I said earlier, the hundreds of youths risk their own lives. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And these are our family members, our friends, people around us, just to bring about change to us in Malaysia. If we are afraid of speaking up, please don't speak against them. Yeah. Because they are our voices now. And it's, as I said, it is really inspiring because the voices are going to continue and build momentum.
All right. Now, let's talk about the intimidation that has been going on. So before we get to the protests and the post-protests, tell me about the kind of intimidation that had been going on prior to the protests to try and prevent the protests from happening.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've already for more than a year now, year and a half, we were seeing a pattern, right? Where the government's cracking down on any instance of dissent or any instance of criticism against the government action, you know, against media, against human rights defenders, even against opposition politicians, right? What more the general public? But if we are really locating it now in the context of what has transpired just within, you know, the events that Secretariat Solidarity Rakyat and the series of events they've initiated, you know, from July 17 onwards, right? You've had their organizers being called in. We've had Muhammad Al-Sastri, Muhammad Ashraf, Nur Taufik being investigated, and they were even fined under Regulation 10 of the Prevention and Control of Infectious Disease. That's like action taken against them. And then we, after the vehicle convoy that happened on 24 July, we saw, this was the nationwide one, where we saw more than 14 individuals being called in for questioning. Yeah. We also saw some of them being called in for repeated questioning. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It started from, you know, 25th to the 27th, and it was discontinuing. And then we saw, you know, the incident where Sarah Erdina, yeah, from Missy Solidarity was arrested from her home. Her family had to endure intimidation and harassment by the authorities. She was then detained for more than 10 hours, yeah? And purely because of a social media post that called for public to participate, yeah? All this, it's all leading towards the protest. What it was intending to do, and even before that, the day before 29 July, you had Tarma Pillay, Afiq Adib, Muhammad Al-Sastri again being questioned, right, by the authorities. This is the form of intimidation because it's creating a fear, not just amongst the organizers, but also the people who are planning to be part of the protest. Because you then have this question, what if I'm arrested? You know, but despite this intimidation and harassment, people still took to the street. It talks about how important the need to take to the street was, and how important it was to get the demands and the messages across. So just prior to that, it has built up to the extent. And what's the point of, you know, investigating them, creating the sphere? What kind of message is the authorities intending to send?
Now, you brought up Sarah from Mrs. Solidarity, and I wanted to get your thoughts a little bit more on that. For her case, they used specifically the Sedition Act, which, you know, then allowed them to search a house without warrant, and they kept her until 1 a.m., you know, in the wee hours of the morning. When you read that this had happened, what were your initial thoughts specifically about the Sedition Act being used?
We've always called out for the need to repeal the Sedition Act purely because of how it's often been misused. Yeah, it is still very overly, you know, in terms of how the definition itself, but the practice is it's been used to silence dissent. Yeah, silence anyone who have have created a negative perception of the government. That's how it's been used, and the fact that it's been used against Sarah Adina shows how disproportionate the government's actions are, basically. You know, was it warranted? Was it even necessary to terrorize a young woman and her family? Yeah, this raised the anger, created a sense of anger from the young people, because it's completely, you know, unjustifiable that you would even invoke Sedition Act against an individual for a social media posting. I mean, on the other hand, you have your politicians, posting things that cannot be verified, posting photos of them having dinners, and events and so on.
Now, on the protests, the police, now that the protest is done, the police have already called up some of the organizers of the protests, including some of the names you mentioned earlier, Mohammad Al-Shatri, who is also from Swaram. We have Kira Yusri and Tharma Pillay, regular guests on BFM. They are from Undi 18, all part of the Secretariat Solidarity Rakyat. Approximately 20 plus people have been called up. And the police have said that they will not only be investigating these organizers, but participants of the protests as well in the coming days. What do you make of this specifically, that the police is also going to be investigating participants?
It demonstrates again how systemic and institutional is the failure of our government, because it's adopting all measures to silence the dissent. Yeah. I mean, we've seen statements made by some politicians about, yes, you know, it's your right to freedom of expression, but now suffer the consequences. But we first of all need to ensure that our laws should really take into account the fact that peaceful assembly is a fundamental right. Yeah. And it's a right within a circumstances or a scenario or an environment where it's so important that, you know, critical messaging is actually heard and our leaders are held to account. So in the event if the authorities are saying that the protest was held with no guidelines, no social distancing measures, then, you know, the authorities, you know, could be to a certain extent say there would be some level of arguments by the authorities to, you know, use that as a justification. On the other hand, what we have seen are instances where, you know, aside from those levels of intimidation, you know, by investigating, arresting, we also saw many instances of intimidation happening on the ground on Saturday. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To start off, there were roadblocks all over the place.
Right.
Yeah. Dataram Merdeka was cordoned off, right? There were heavy police presence, and I had no idea why some of them even had to be armed, right? These are young, peaceful protesters. And then you had a helicopter hovering around the crowd, and then you had police siren when, you know, the speakers were trying to convey their messages. And you even had a police vehicle drive through the crowd. All these are instances and means and ways of how the police was actually intimidating the crowd and using, you know, these means of, you know, disrupting the space. Now, if the authorities are genuine about public health and genuine in terms of really dealing with the public health issue on the ground, they should have allowed the protesters to go into the Taramadika, sit, have your say, have your speech. It's open ventilation. I mean, so, and we also have to bear in mind again, any restrictions for public health reasons must always be necessary and proportionate.
Now, Wachala, before we wrap this conversation up, do you have a final message you'd like to leave us with?
I think it's important for us to understand that, you know, freedom of expression is completely critical, and it cannot be undermined at any point or be used, or any justification of COVID and a public health crisis be used to undermine it. There could be certain restrictions which are proportionate and necessary, And in the context of freedom of expression, we also have to understand that freedom of association and assembly is also critical, because if we are not able to do this, we lose all means and ways of holding our state accountable. So I think there are different ways of how we can support the youth who had this protest, But for Malaysia to change, for Malaysia to be, you know, healthy, for Malaysia to continue on its path for, you know, as a progressive nation, we must hold our state, especially our current government, to account. And we need to do this in different ways that are peaceful, that are proactive, but we cannot remain silent.
On that note, thank you so much for speaking to me today, Wachala.
Thank you very much. Yep.
That was Wachala Naidu, Executive Director at the Center for Independent Journalism, sharing her insights and thoughts on the Lawan protest that took place on Saturday, as well as the current ongoing investigation onto organizers and participants. So if you missed any part of the conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app and bfm.my. I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.